This is Audible.
Random House Audio presents The Lost Symbol by Dan Brown. Read for you by Paul Michael. Chapter 69. Where the hell are they taking me? Bellamy was still blindfolded in the back of an SUV. After a short stop somewhere close to the Library of Congress, the vehicle had continued on, but only for a minute. Now the SUV had stopped again, having again traveled only about a block. Bellamy heard muffled voices talking. "Sorry, impossible," an authoritative voice was saying. "Closed at this hour." The man driving the SUV replied with equal authority. "CIA investigation. National security." Apparently the exchange of words and IDs was persuasive, because the tone shifted immediately. "Yes, of course. Service entrance." There was the loud grinding of what sounded like a garage door, and as it opened, the voice added, "Shall I accompany you? Once you're inside, you won't be able to get through." "No, we have access already." If the guard was surprised, it was too late. The SUV was moving again. It advanced about 50 yards and then came to a stop. The heavy door rumbled closed again behind them. Silence. Bellamy realized he was trembling. With a bang, the SUV's rear hatch flew open. Bellamy felt a sharp pain in his shoulders as someone dragged him out by his arms, then lifted him to his feet. Without a word, a powerful force led him across a wide expanse of pavement. There was a strange, earthy smell here that he could not place. There were footsteps of someone else walking with them, but whoever it was had yet to speak. They stopped at a door, and Bellamy heard an electronic ping. The door clicked open. Bellamy was manhandled through several corridors and could not help but notice that the air was warmer and more humid. An indoor pool, maybe? No. The smell in the air was not chlorine. It was far more earthy and primal. Where the hell are we? Bellamy knew he could not be more than a block or two from the Capitol building. Again they stopped, and again he heard the electronic beep of a security door. This one slid open with a hiss. As they pushed him through, the smell that hit him was unmistakable. Bellamy now realized where they were. My God. He came here often, although never through the service entrance. This magnificent glass building was only 300 yards from the Capitol building and was technically part of the Capitol complex. I run this place. Bellamy now realized it was his own key fob that was giving them access. Powerful arms pushed him through the doorway, leading him down a familiar, winding walkway. The heavy, damp warmth of this place usually felt comforting to him. Tonight, he was sweating. What are we doing here? Bellamy was halted suddenly and seated on a bench. The man with the muscles unhooked his handcuffs, only long enough to reaffix them to the bench behind his back. What do you want from me? Bellamy demanded, heart pounding wildly. The only response he received was the sound of boots walking off and the glass door sliding shut. Then silence. Dead silence. They're just going to leave me here? Bellamy was sweating more heavily now as he struggled to release his hands. I can't even take off my blindfold? Help! He shouted. Anybody! Even as he called out in panic, Bellamy knew nobody was going to hear him. This massive glass room, known as the jungle, was entirely airtight when the doors were closed. They left me in the jungle, he thought. Nobody will find me until morning. Then he heard it. The sound was barely audible, but it terrified Bellamy like no sound he had ever heard in his life. Something breathing. Very close. He was not alone on the bench. The sudden hiss of a sulfur match sizzled so close to his face that he could feel the heat. Bellamy recoiled, instinctively yanking hard at his chains. Then, without warning, a hand was on his face, removing his blindfold. The flame before him reflected in the black eyes of Inoue Sato as she pressed the match against the cigarette dangling from her lips, only inches away from Bellamy's face. She glared at him in the moonlight that filtered down through the glass ceiling. She looked pleased to see his fear.
"So, Mr. Bellamy,"
Sato said, shaking out the match,
"where shall we begin?"
Chapter 70. A Magic Square. Catherine nodded as she eyed the numbered square in Dürer's engraving. Most people would have thought Langdon had lost his mind, but Catherine had quickly realized he was right. The term magic square referred not to something mystical, but to something mathematical. It was the name given to a grid of consecutive numbers arranged in such a way that all the rows, columns, and diagonals added up to the same thing. Created some 4,000 years ago by mathematicians in Egypt and India, magic squares were still believed by some to hold magical powers. Catherine had read that even nowadays devout Indians drew special 3x3 magic squares called the Kubera Kolam on their puja altars. Primarily, though, modern man had relegated magic squares to the category of recreational mathematics. Some people still deriving pleasure from the quest to discover new magical configurations. Sudoku for geniuses. Catherine quickly analyzed Dürer's square, adding up the numbers in several rows and columns.
34, she said. Every direction adds up to 34.
Exactly, Langdon said. But did you know that this magic square is famous because Dürer accomplished the seemingly impossible? He quickly showed Catherine that in addition to making the rows, columns, and diagonals add up to 34, Dürer had also found a way to make the four quadrants, the four center squares, and even the four corner squares add up to that number. Most amazing, though, was Dürer's ability to position the numbers 15 and 14 together in the bottom row as an indication of the year in which he accomplished this incredible feat. Catherine scanned the numbers, amazed by all the combinations. Langdon's tone grew more excited now. Extraordinarily, Melancholia I represents the very first time in history that a magic square appeared in European art. Some historians believe this was Dürer's encoded way of indicating that the ancient mysteries had traveled outside the Egyptian mystery schools and were now held by the European secret societies. Langdon paused. Which brings us back to this. He motioned to the slip of paper bearing the grid of letters from the stone pyramid. I assume the layout looks familiar now? Langdon asked.
4x4 square.
Langdon picked up the pencil and carefully transcribed Dürer's numbered magic square onto the slip of paper, directly beside the lettered square. Catherine was now seeing just how easy this was going to be. He stood poised, pencil in hand, and yet